get up before sunup to get the work done up. We'd work in the fields till the sun had gone down. We've stood and we've cried as we've helplessly watched a hailstorm beating our crops to the ground. We've gone to bed hungry many nights in the past, in the good old days when times were bad.
All right, that's Dolly Parton for you public radio listeners. D-O-L-L. No, you know, I think you know who Dolly Parton is, but I think there's a lot of people who listen to public radio who don't listen to country music, and they think they don't like country music either. And there's a lot of kind of East Coast snobbery about country music, and probably just general public radio snobbery. Well, Bob Newhart's a very nice man, but he used to say, "I don't like country music, but I don't mean to denigrate those who do. And for the people who like country music, denigrate means put down." See, that's kind of a mean joke about country music listeners. I don't think it's entirely fair. And then, I mean, there are a lot of jokes about country music. And a whole one about how what happens when you play a country music record backwards. You know, you get your wife back, you get your job back, your dog comes to life, your pickup truck uncrashes, that whole thing. So I like country music. I wouldn't call myself a country music fan, but it might surprise people who listen to this show and listen to my effete Ivy League way of expressing myself most of the time that, for example, staffers on this show know that on a Friday afternoon, if it's been a particularly exhausting week, I might either play through the speakers of my computer or sing, if people are especially unlucky that on that Friday, Porter Wagoner singing, "I've enjoyed as much of this as I can stand." Now, that sounds, if you think you don't like country music, that's what that song would be, a song that you'd be thinking of. It's very twangy and full of musical cliches and stuff like that. So for me, I mean, I listen to a lot of different kinds of music, but I mean, the last time I really cried hard in a concert, it was a Lyle Lovett concert. You know, Lyle takes me to a very special place. I mean, not too many people. Well, only a country song could begin, "Darling, put down that fly swatter and pour me some ice water." And you kind of want to know what comes next after that. And you're also kind of impressed that somebody could think of rhyming fly swatter and ice water. That's got to only happen in a country song. So why is it that you think you don't like country music? And why is it that you think that country music exists in some other place? And that place is full of white people who are not particularly cognizant of things that you like. And some of the things that you like maybe are a little bit more African-American-derived music, you know, whether it's hip-hop, soul, jazz, blues. You think it's full of Republicans? You've got all kinds of, well, anyway, this is the show that we're going to do. Carmen Baskoff, a producer on Where We Live, who's a girl from Nashville, suggested we do it. We turned it over to the excellent Zandra Ellen. She found us our first guest here. In the last part of the show, you're going to meet an African-American emergent country star. So there. But right now, we're going to talk to Nadine Hubbs, a professor of women's studies and music at the University of Michigan and the author most recently of Rednecks, Queers, and Country Music. So, Nadine, you've been, or Dean, as I guess I'm going to call you the rest of the time, you've been listening to me babble and sing. And you haven't hung up or anything, so that's good.
But, no, I'm here.
Good. So react to this. I mean, you know better than I do the divide I'm talking about. There's a them or us relationship towards this extraordinarily popular form of American music.
No, you're absolutely right. And so I have no problem at all with your intro. And in fact, the first chapter of my book is called Anything But Country. And that is a reference to the short but powerful phrase that has come into fashion as the prime answer to the question, what kind of music do you listen to? Mm-hmm. For Americans of a certain age, at this point, probably folks under 50 across all kinds of social boundaries share that phrase in common. And when I have gone out to campuses to talk about my research, undergraduate students have told me, even in the Deep South, oh yeah, that's what we all say. That's the main answer that you give to that question. What do you listen to? I listen to anything but country.
One of the things that you talk about is confirmation bias, right? That there's, once you've sort of decided that, if I play you a beautiful Brad Paisley ballad like It's Raining You, what's going to happen? The person's going to hear certain musical tropes first, right? And just shut down?
That often happens, yeah. And so it really mystified me. I mean, a lot of your listeners may be wondering at this point, well, wait, what are you talking about? There's so much crossover going on in country music in recent years. And that's true. It's not a new thing. It may seem new, but Patsy Cline was a crossover star in 1961. Shania Twain, of course, was a huge crossover artist in the 90s. Every decade has seen crossover since probably the late 50s, at least. But there has been a lot of crossover, and so I've wondered myself, how can it be that we have this phenomenon whereby research shows us that people associate country music with things they don't like, and they divide it from their own tastes in order to position themselves as middle-class individuals and position themselves in relation at the same time to all kinds of issues. I mean, you've mentioned race already. You were talking about white people. Race, class, region.
We could even throw in foreign policy and imputed jingoism. So sometimes country music causes its own problems. Let's listen to a song by Toby Keith, which you're quite familiar with and have a bunch to say about, I know. So this is courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue.
Daddy served in the army. We lost his right eye, but he flew a flag out in our yard till the day that he died. He wanted my mother, my brother, my sister and me to grow up and live happy in the land of the free. Now this nation that I love is falling under attack. A mighty sucker punch came flying in from somewhere in the back. Soon as we could see clearly through our big black eye, man, we lit up your world like the 4th of July. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And the eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start a ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole
and it goes on like this. And you know, Dean, whether it's that song or Ernest Tubb back in the old days singing It's America, Love It or Leave It, or Lee Greenwood singing I'm Proud to Be an American, where at least I know I'm free, there's a militarism sometimes, a jingoism almost, I think, and maybe a song like that one, you may choose to differ, or sometimes just a level of unblinking, unvarnished, unquestioning patriotism that certain parts of America will be uncomfortable with. I don't know, maybe you want to get specific about the Toby Keith song first.
I got specific about the Toby Keith song, sorry, in my book, and talked about the history of that song. Before I get into that, though, I just want to say, no, I don't disagree with you that the songs you listed have a jingoistic effect. And I would just point out that there's also a long list of songs that have really opposite political effect. If you think of the multi-crossover albums that Johnny Cash released from prisons mm-hmm. in 1968 and 1969, Folsom and San Quentin, those songs had a really different politics and are also even bigger hits in country music, in the history of country music. And the 1992 song, We Shall Be Free, by Garth Brooks, was a really early song to make a bid that we should be free to love whoever we choose, a pro-LGBTQ bid that wasn't happening in other styles of popular music at the time. So having said all that, yeah, country does have songs like this one, courtesy of the Red, White, and Blue, which Toby Keith released. And I don't know if he lived to regret it, but he had written the song for the troops. He was doing lots of USO tours. And this was the early 2000s when war was declared on Iraq. And the troops said, you got to record this song. We love this song on the USO tours. He did record it. It became probably still the most notorious instance that people cite for conservative and jingoistic politics and country music.
I think the mistake that people make is that category mistake, too. I mean, you know, when they say country music is this or country music is that, I mean, it's like saying jazz is this or jazz is that. I mean, or hip hop, or pick any genre, right? So just by way of contrast, we're going to play the first song on our playlist for today by Luke Bryan. This song is called, much more recent song, called Most People Are Good.
I believe kids ought to stay kids as long as they can. Turn off the screen, go climb a tree, get dirt on their hands. I believe we gotta forgive and make amends, 'cause nobody gets a second chance to make new old friends. I believe in working hard for what you even if it don't add up to a hell of a lot. I believe most people are good and most mamas ought to qualify for sainthood. I believe most Friday nights look better under neon or stadium lights. I believe you love who you love, ain't nothing you should ever be ashamed of. I believe this.
So I wanted to get that line in there, Dean. I believe you love who you love. Ain't nothing you should be ashamed of. I don't think there's a lot of ambiguity about what he means there.
No, and that is a line that's becoming a kind of a trope in country music by now. I noted it in my book, which came out in 2014, but I had already quoted that line. And the Luke Bryan song you just played has been out for less than a year. It's been an enormous hit, and it was performed live at the CMA Awards last November. So that song is new, but the line, when I quoted it in my book, I was quoting it from the Rascal Flatts song, which came out about 10 years ago. And then, as I said just before this, way back in 92, a very similar line was used by Garth Brooks in We Shall Be Free.
So there are ways in which these songs and some of these artists are starting to cross that boundary, trying to shed a different kind of light, maybe even on stuff like geopolitics and stuff like that. But I think another aspect of all this, and it's the thing that America, I think, has been trying to come to grips with in all kinds of genres and all kinds of places, really since 2015, 2016, you know, whether it's a book like Hillbilly Elegy or maybe one of the songs we're about to talk about, is that country music has also been the music of people who feel very much left out of certain kinds of economic opportunities. I mean, really, since its inception, it's been the music of the poor, of the farmer, of the jailed person, quite frequently. That's another part of that. And even that Dolly Parton song that we opened with is kind of about that, right? That a lot of these artists are trying to talk about ways in which they'd like people to look at another part of America. Maybe you can say more about that.
Country is associated with that. It's associated with that historically. And at times, yeah, country songs are about people who feel left out and representing for people who have been left out. I think in a lot of instances, folk music is more focused on those kinds of themes than country is. Country has a lot of other themes, and for example, the song you just played really isn't about that theme.
No.
And I want to make sure, too, we're talking about the history of country, and I want to talk about current country, too, so I'm glad you played that example. Country music is somewhat special, I guess, in that there's an industry, there's a trade group, the CMA, the Country Music Association, that is focused on researching how the music does, where it does well, where it's not doing as well, maybe what new demographic groups might be on the radar. So, for example, my current project is called Country Mexicans. Latinos and Latinas are one of the fastest growing fan groups in American country music, and that's what I'm studying right now. But about 25 years ago, the CMA and the country music industry focused really hard on branching out and reaching a wide audience. And that effort was called Young Country or New Country. They were very successful. And by now, country music has a lot of suburban and middle-class listeners. I think a lyric like Luke Bryan's appeals to listeners like that, and it's really not at all like the Dolly Parton lyric we heard in the opening.
No.
It's not to say that those songs don't still exist, because they still do, and they still are embraced by the audience.
I think also the network series Nashville really helped open up a different kind of suburban audience to all the different kinds of country music that there are. We're going to go to a break, but I just want to, as we go to the break, I don't want to lose that point that country music, I think, does, parts of country music, still do try to kind of tell that story. I mean, there's a Jason Aldean song that you know that says they ain't talking about people just driving by or mm-hmm. They ain't seen the blood, sweat, and tears it took to live their dreams when everything's on the line. Ain't just another field, just another farm. No, it's the ground we grew up on. They think it's the middle of nowhere place where we take it slow, but they don't know. All they see is tractors, barbed wire, and tall green grass. They don't see the years spent working, busting their ass. I think that's very much, as you say, maybe an outgrowth of the folk message, the Woody Guthrie message. As we go into a break here, I'm going to play a song by a really emergent country star. Her name is Margot Price. This is going to sound like something Woody Guthrie wrote. It's called Heart of America.
Mother gets up so early in the morning. She turns on the stove and she makes a pot of coffee. My daddy filled his tractor up, diesel planted corn. That's how it was on the day that I was born. Well, the days they went by and the bins filled up with grain. My mother's brother died on a motorcycle in the rain. The town it got too big for his britches, and the government it came, and now it will never be the same. No one moves away with no money, they just do what they can. To live in the heart of America, getting by on their own two hands. You can pray to anybody's Jesus and be a hard-working man.
That's Brandi Carlile. We're talking about country music with Nadine Hubbs, professor of women's studies and music at the University of Michigan, the author most recently of Rednecks, Queers, and Country Music. Dean, you and I were talking about this before the show started. We weren't talking about Brandi Carlile, but, you know, she probably doesn't really exactly identify as country. She might be Americana or Americana roots or alternative country. She's probably in 16 other genres, but she might not identify as country. There are even artists like Jason Isbell who really reject the country label. Like, they almost think it might be bad for them. Like, they don't want to get lumped in with Trace Atkins or something. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Well, I would say fair enough. If you don't want to be identified as a country artist, that's okay. And I think that it represents something very real, which is that although alternative country, which is also known as Americana and sometimes as roots music, shares the word country along with mainstream or top 40 country, they are worlds apart. And although Nashville is a site, a lot of performances and recording in both of those styles, a lot of the people who identify, whether as audience or artist, in Americana, I prefer to call it, because alternative country is misleading, a lot of those folks really don't want anything to do with a country music identity. And it has to do with the things that we were talking about earlier, the perceptions of politics and social politics and ultimately class and region.
I think those are really important. In fact, let's give one more example of this. Okay, this is going to be 8 Wolfie. We're going to hear the Milk Carton Kids once again. This would be a group that probably doesn't like the label country. This is recorded in Nashville. And when you hear how it sounds, you're going to wonder why it wouldn't be country music.
I've lowered my glass to the table. I fashion this smile from a dream. The stars overhead bear their meaning.
I'd play a lot more of that if we had time. Milk Carton Kids are really great. But Dean, you know, they don't want to be called country, and I think you hit on a couple of things. Politics. Their new album really does explore some of their anxieties about the age of Trump. And I think class and education is some part of this, too. You mentioned those.
Yeah, that's the association. Okay, so, and I would also say that I wouldn't think that that song, I wouldn't think of that song when I hear it as a mainstream country song, or what I call, quoting another critic, Walmart country versus so-called alternative country. That sounds like Americana music to me because it is retro. As, I quoted a critic in my book who says Americana music, alt country, is about the Depression era. It's about moonshine stills. And, you know, mainstream top 40 country really isn't. It's not so backward focused. It's really focused on daily life and issues in folks' lives. It's very much about right now, even though it may wax nostalgic. And musically, right, it's not going to sound like that usually. Now, there are exceptions. A few years ago, the band Perry, the brother and sister act, had a really great couple of years, and they were real crossovers between Americana, and they're not the only ones. But in general, you know, country sounds different than that.
Right. And some of the ways the country sounds different are ways that are going to be troubling in yet another way. You know, we've talked about politics. We've talked about maybe issues of race. There's an emergent subgenre called bro country in which the objectification of women seems like the Me Too movement just kind of isn't happening. Here's Trace Atkins introducing this term, by the way, in a song called Honky Tonk Badonkadonk.
Turn it up, son. All right, boys. This is her favorite song, you know that, right? So we play it good and loud. She might get up and dance again. Oh, she put her beard down. Here she comes, here she comes. Left, 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 right, left. Whew. Hustler shooting 8-ball, throwing darts at the wall, feeling damn near 10 feet tall. Here she comes, Lord help us all. OTW's girlfriend done slapped him out his chair. Poor old boy, it ain't his fault. It's so hard not to stare at that honky tonk, but donk it donk.
And if you watch the video, what's going left, right, left are the cheeks of a woman's gluteus maximus. So, you know, I mean, once again, it feels as though in some of the same ways that maybe hip-hop goes to a place that some that women often might be uncomfortable with, the bro country seems like just really kind of getting up in your face, so to speak, with that kind of attitude.
Yeah, and bro country is really very much on the wane. It had its prime, and it's been cooling rapidly for at least a year, maybe more. The opening artist, Luke Bryan, was to some extent part of that a few years ago. Here, Trace Adkins is foreshadowing, perhaps, way back in 2006, because bro country had a peak that lasted, you know, 4 or 5 years. And as I say, it's waned by now. But it was very much influenced by hip-hop. And badonkadonk, as a word for booty, shows evidence of a certain traffic between country and R&B and hip-hop that is a kind of nonstop traffic of country, especially borrowing musically and verbally, rhetorically. Maybe more these days than it goes the other way around.
We're kind of running out of time because we're going to have to talk to Priscilla Renee in just a second. But Dean, where does all this leave you? I mean, in many of the ways that we're divided and uncommunicative as a nation, as a society, a lot of these riffs seem to show up here, too. There's thoughtful, interesting music being done in the country genre, and people on another side of a divide refusing to believe that, which seems like an odd parallel to a lot of other things that went on in our country over the last few years, or the last many years.
Yeah, and I'm glad you bring that up, because really that's the reason that I've been doing this work for so many years and why I wrote the book, Redneck Squares and Country Music, is to try to bridge the divide and multiple divides that are illustrated really powerfully with country music and all the people who disclaim it with the phrase anything but country and in any number of other ways. And by the way, I would mention that even in the northeastern United States, country listenership is creeping upward from the stats that I've seen. But the Northeast has been the quadrant with the lowest. And my region of the United States, the Midwest, actually has the highest, higher than the South. So this takes me back to the point that I never quite managed to finish at the beginning, which is at the same time that we see more and more division with this anything but country sort of proclamation, at the same time, we do have a lot of crossover going on. Country hits getting onto the pop charts, in some cases R&B charts. We have to note that these are contradictory impulses that are going on, that are both going strong at the same time. So I have wondered about that. And how do people sort of split their brains to listen to this music, the crossover hits from country, and at the same time really hold country at arm's length? What I can figure out from talking with my students at University of Michigan and other folks is when a country song, like, say, a few years ago, Little Big Town's Girl Crush, makes it onto the pop charts, and people, including some of my country-hating students, listen to that song and like that song, they don't think of it as a country song.
Exactly. We're going to have to leave it right there. Nadine Hubbs, thank you so much for joining us. Author most recently of Redneck Squares and Country Music. We'll be back.
And I'm making fun of me and my coat of many colors my mama made for me. And oh, I couldn't understand it, for I felt I was rich. And I told him all the love my mama sewed in every stitch. And I told him all the story mama told me while she sewed, and how my coat of many colors was worth more than all their clothes. But they didn't understand it, and I tried to make them see that one is only poor, only if they choose to be. Now I know we had no money, but I was rich as I could be in my coat of many colors my mama made for me, made just for me.
Today's show was produced by Zandra Ellen, with help from Jonathan McPants and me, Kyone Wolf. Part of Phil Curry was played by Toby Keith. On tomorrow's show, our pop culture roundtable, The Nose. And now, back to Colin.
You may or may not have heard of Priscilla Renee, and she's an American singer-songwriter. I'm going to play a track a little bit from her new album, Colored, which came out just last month, and then I'm going to tell you some things about her. So let's just start with this, though. We're going to start with the song Gentle Hands.
Dear God, I want a man. I want him strong. Ain't scared to dance. Knows how to work. He's down to earth. When he gets home, he puts me first. I don't mean to interfere if it ain't in your plan. But I want a big, strong man with gentle hands. He drives.
So, Priscilla Renee, first of all, welcome to our conversation.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, as I'm listening to this song, one can place that pretty easily and squarely in the tradition of country music. I can imagine a roadhouse full of probably largely white country music fans line dancing to that particular song and being really, really happy with it. It's just right there. There are other songs on this CD. I'm especially knocked out by the sort of channeling Aretha Franklin-style ballad, Heavenly, that place you very squarely in a different tradition. So I guess the first thing we have to tell the listeners, if they don't know you, is that you are an African-American country performer, and you do claim that, at least country, as part of your label, of your way of understanding what you do. Tell us why.
Well, I grew up on a farm in Wabasso, Florida, or Vero Beach is what's on the map. My dad was in the Navy for 22 years, so I've also lived various places, like I actually lived in Groton, Connecticut. Yeah, that's actually where my mom first found that I could sing. There was this commercial that used to play Spirit of Hampton Roads. And I would sing that all the time. But anyway, I grew up and I had a pet hog. I had chickens, geese, fish, peacocks. And we would go there every summer, every Christmas. And my uncle is a black cowboy. He makes whips by hand. He cracks shows. I know how to crack whips. He taught me how to shoot, hunt. I'm just a country girl, man. Like, I didn't have a pair of sneakers until I was in like sixth grade. It was like flip-flops or bare feet. So that's just where I come from.
And we should say that you have one great acclaim in the music world by writing songs for a lot of other artists, and many of whom do not perform country music, people like Kesha and Rihanna, but also people who do, like Carrie Underwood and Miranda Lambert. Colored is your second album, and I'm assuming, well, let's start with the title. The title would seem to me to have maybe multiple meanings, but one of them might be some calling attention to what it's like to be a black performer in an overwhelmingly white genre.
Well, that seems to be like the draw. I mean, it's the easiest thing to point out, but honestly, there's way more deeper meanings on the album title than just the racial aspect. I'm more of like an onion kind of person. I never do anything that doesn't have layers. And this time in the universe and in the stars and all that is a very colorful time. Like the sun is really shining on me, which the sun has the full spectrum of all colors. So that's an element of what the album title means. But I think obviously me being black and in the country space, which for consumers is not very friendly to people who are of color, especially in those spaces. I mean, if we're being honest, I'm from the South. I know what it's like. I went to school with these kids. When they go to these festivals and they're mudding and they're doing all the stuff, they're drinking beers, whatever, they don't want black people around. It's just how it is. It's not that, you know, we go to school with them, they're nice to us in school, but then when it's their own time, they say things. And we've been seeing things on the internet about like, yeah, let's go catch us a, you know, N-word.
Mm-hmm.
Like that kind of stuff is happening now. And I think it's always been happening, but I think Trump has gaslit everybody into thinking that this kind of behavior is okay. And I think that the people who vote for Trump are the people who exist and live in the spaces where country music is popular. And if you can't see that at this point, I think that you are just willingly ignoring it. I don't let that kind of thing faze me because I know that music can be kind of like a thread to bring people together. And when I sing, when people hear my music, they might be judging me when they see me walk in the building. But when I start singing, all that goes away. So I have a privilege that is different than a lot of people. I have music privilege.
Priscilla, I have to be honest and say, I had not heard of you prior to the scheduling of this interview. And then when I listened to Colored, I was just completely blown away. And I was blown away in particular by the way that you can kind of bestride multiple genres. I mean, really, Heavenly does sound like somebody channeling Aretha. And that's like the highest compliment
wow.
you can
that's
give somebody.
A huge compliment.
So one thing this record is about identity and about your identity and your story. I'm going to play a little bit from a song called Family Tree.
My mama never taught me about the world because the world turned her inside out. My pa was the right arm of love, kept us all locked in the house. My brothers and my sisters needed love, so I grew and they clung to me. Till I became the roots and the fruits and the branches of my family tree.
So in that song, Priscilla, Renee, it sounds like, I mean, you're trying to tell your story. And I assume that telling your story means embracing a style of music that you grew up with, this style.
Right.
I guess maybe this is my way of asking this question. You could have said, you know what, I'm a roots Americana performer. There's a lot of people doing that right now. I mean, Rhiannon Giddens isn't running around saying she's a country musician. I don't think, anyway. And even Jason Isbell has backed off of country as a label. You're running towards the idea of being a country musician. Is that simply because you can't extricate that from who you really are?
Well, yeah, I'm not really thinking about, like, genre-wise. I'm thinking about how I grew up and what I like. And country music is about storytelling, and that's what I do. I tell stories. So I don't know. The label is less important, I think, than the space that it should exist in, you know?
Right. So I think also one of the, I mean, feel free to disagree with me, but I think one of the ideas that has grown up around the phenomenon that you just described, the fact that when you look at the crowds at a country arena show, you can see who they are and who's welcome and who isn't. So I think what people have placed alongside that is the notion that the music is similarly segregated. I think if we go back to the 1930s, Jimmie Rodgers and Leadbelly don't really sound all that different. I'm going to play a Mean Mama Blues. So these are white country musicians doing this tune.
And hoping for the best, but blues will make me ramble, and the rails are leading west. I'm feeling awful lonesome, pleasure I can't find.
So Priscilla, Renee, as you listen to that, I mean, those are white country musicians singing in a black musical idiom. I could play you something from 1930 where Leadbelly is singing as a black musician, singing very much in the idiom of almost the white folk music he would have absorbed from Scottish, Irish people in the South, people who came over with that heritage. It seems like if we go back that far, you can hear black in the white and white in the black. But somehow or other, there's this notion that they don't merge and touch very well here in 2018. What's your take on that?
I think black people have just kind of been phased out in the country space.
Mm-hmm.
I think the label country has definitely been associated with more of a skin tone than actual music, because most black people just get thrown in the R&B soul category, or they try to force you to be like, well, why aren't you Americana? You know, like that happens all the time with me,
mm-hmm.
especially that this is just my personal experience, but dude, the banjo is a West African instrument. Like, stop it. I'm just saying. Like, I think one of the things that happens in America a lot is whitewashing. People will discover, people who are not of color will discover something from a different culture, rebrand it, repackage it, rename it, and sell it and off as their own. And that happens a lot. And black people, because, you know, within our culture, unfortunately, we aren't really taught how to protect ourselves in business, and it's always been that way since back in times of slavery. And if you look at, like, a lot of our modern inventions, heart surgery, peanut butter, hair products, weave was invented by a black woman, all these things kind of have been stripped from us, and our identities become stripped from us because, you know, white people want ownership over our ideas. I don't know where that comes from, honestly. I can't speak to why we are such a target, maybe because we're so creative, but we make, you know, we know how to make something out of nothing. You know, I get really offended when people who aren't black, I'm like, oh my gosh, I love soul food. I'm like, do you realize that soul food came because we were given the scraps and the worst food, and we turned it into something amazing, and now you want to eat it? You know, so it's like you have to know why things are the way they are, how they got to be that way, that you can have a respect for what those people went through to overcome whatever obstacles that they were presented with. And I think country music comes from gospel. It comes from the church. If you go to the Johnny Cash Museum in Nashville, which I've been, it's amazing. All the way in the back, you'll see where it says that he got his first inspiration for music from a Christian group. It was a white family, but they were singing blues-style gospel. And so I think the history gets whitewashed, and people forget that where country music originated from, how many black cowboys there were actually in the West and in the South. And it's just time for us to stop pretending, and anybody who continues to try to hold anyone back at this point is just a sad, miserable person.
I'm sort of wondering about the difference between the artists and the industry, the artists and their audience. I mean, there have been efforts, you know, we can think of, maybe it wasn't the most acclaimed effort, but you had Brad Paisley and LL Cool J doing Accidental Racist. You had Nelly and Tim McGraw doing Over and Over. There have been ways in which artists, anyway, have gotten together to say, this music isn't all that different. At the time of Over and Over,
right,
Nelly said, look, hip-hop and country, they come out of poverty-stricken communities. And if you go back to 1930, it's the same thing. Country music and the blues, those were the music of rural poor people, people who often wound up in jail, whether they deserved it or not. Those are what those songs are about on both sides of the racial line. So it seems like the artists maybe want to take this question on a little bit more. The question is, can they bring the audience with them?
And the music is good.
Right. Some people said that was the problem with Accidental Racist, that if it had been a better song.
I think what's happening is that country music is trying to go pop. And the thing is that it's two different kinds of styles of writing. If you're telling stories in pop, the story has to end by the time you get to the chorus. And then it has to be a hit chorus. And then you can finish telling the story. But in country music, they tend to just tell the story all the way through. It's hard for them to translate. If you haven't been well-versed in writing a pop song, it's hard to mix the two styles. And so I think what's happening is you have this mess of songs that almost sound pop and don't sound country enough. And then also, the people in the pop world are asking me to write them country songs. They want to go country. So it's this weird transition. I'm hesitant to do it, because I'm like, you guys have to respect the song. I'm not just about to like open up a can of worms and have all these pop stars running around Nashville and have all of Nashville hating me. I'm not going to do that. I'm going to be respectful, because the reason why I love Nashville so much is because they respect the song. So I think what I've been able to do, thank God, is straddle that line. I've been able to write songs that have pop influence, pop structure, but that still tell stories. And my voice and the way that I present the songs brings in the soulful element. It's just a nice combo that I'm very, very blessed to have. And I didn't plan it that way. That's just how it worked out.
Last thing to talk about in that context, Priscilla Renee, on your new album, Colored, you have a song called A Land of the Free. Let's play a little bit of that right now.
Yeah.
So, Priscilla Renee, your life probably would be easier if you didn't do that song or didn't put it on the first album of yours that people have maybe heard in a long time or people just kind of getting to know you. Tell me why it was important to do that song.
Well, one of the things that makes me different from a lot of other black country artists is that I'm really catering to the people who look like me.
Mm-hmm.
And they are happy about that song. They all comment and say, wow, you described exactly how I feel. Thank you for this song. I'm not really concerned about the people who don't like it because it's a true story. And I even say that in the line, if you don't believe it's true, I guess I wrote this song for you. Because there's a lot of people who like to say that black people are imagining racism, that they're overreacting, that, you know, nobody wants to intimidate you. You're just breaking the law. Have you not been on Instagram? Have you not seen white people calling the police on black people for doing normal things? Mowing the lawn, swimming in the pool. It's ridiculous. So this is true. This is what black people have to go through on top of all the things that we have to go through in life. Paying bills, medical issues, dealing with children, marriage. We got to deal with white people calling the police on us trying to get us shot. So, and my father's a police officer, so I'm not biased against police. I have several policemen in my family. But I've also been racially profiled by the police.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a difficult space to be in, to understand both sides, but to know that there is definitely a problem with white police officers enforcing or over-enforcing their power within black communities. They're supposed to be helping us, but according to the law, they are not here to protect and serve us. And also, I'm not sure about the rest of the world, but I know in the South, police began by policing the slaves to make sure they didn't run away or to check you to make sure you were free. So you have to know your history. This is what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. And because I know what I'm talking about, I'm not afraid to share my perspective. Anybody who wants me to stop sharing my perspective is probably somebody who wants to control me and control my mouth and not let me tell my story. So I don't really care about those people.
I want to ask you where you think we're headed, particularly maybe in the genre that we've been talking about. So you went to the Grand Ole Opry, and backstage there were on the wall, the only black people you saw were Chuck Berry and Darius Rucker. I gotta think Charlie Pride is up there somewhere. Maybe they were having his thing cleaned that day or something.
Maybe I missed that, but the particular section of the wall that I was looking at when I first walked in there, it was just those two guys.
I guess in 10, 15 years, do you think that'll be different? And do you think a song like Land of the Free will be such an unusual thing in country, or will there be other people producing that kind of music within country?
I don't know. It's got to be people who are fearless. I'm fearless. I know people, like, don't like it. They really don't. They look me in my eyes and tell me I'm not a country singer. But then I'm like, well, me and Jay Gowen graduated from the same high school, so I don't understand.
All right. We're gonna go out. Priscilla Renee, thanks for talking to us today. We're going to go out with your beautiful ballad, Heavenly, from the album Colored. Thanks for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
Baby, you're an angel. Hey, baby. From above.